Well, I would say it's the shift towards a more culture of open government. The president's first homework assignment to my office was, in fact, to provide recommendations on how we make our government more transparent, participatory, and collaborative. And we spent 2009 building the policy foundation for open government. 2010 has been the year of execution, and I'm pleased to report that in every federal agency, we've got ideas and execution ideas and plans afoot to deliver on the president's promise. So open government and the culture of open government specifically, I think, is our top priority.
And, of course, the one-year anniversary just days ago, and a lot of people looking at how much progress has been made. Are there things that have gone better than expected, and the flip side of that, things that you're going, oh, yeah, we need to work on that a little bit?
I would say there's a lot to celebrate, but the ecosystem that's been born out of the open health data movement under the leadership of Todd Park, the chief technology officer over at HHS, I believe has surpassed our expectations of what it might mean to have a community organized around open government. Thousands of developers have worked together on specific applications, encouraging new ideas or data sources to come forward. Entrepreneurs from all parts of the country have gathered to think about opportunities to improve the nation's healthcare system powered by information, mostly out of the open government directive. So the ecosystem that's been born out of the open health data movement, I believe, is one of the shining lights, and there are probably half a dozen others that we couldn't get to today.
And, of course, it's great having somebody like Todd Park over there who's he seems like the Energizer Bunny. I mean, I don't know when he sleeps. He's just always, like, so excited about this stuff. It just becomes infectious. You just can't wait to test out the things that he's putting together.
I know, and it's not just Todd. We've got chief technologies officers at the VA under Peter Levin and my colleague Jim Shelton, who runs innovation over at the Department of Education. All have been using open government as a key pillar of their work, and all have demonstrated results in fostering these ecosystems to not only publish the data, but to do something meaningful with it. And so across the board, where we've got these CTOs, and I'm just speaking only about my little corner of the world, we certainly have seen, exceeded expectations in kind of the use of this information.
Yeah, I don't think your corner is that little, but it's one of the things that seems like if this is going to really take hold, if this is going to last beyond one administration, is that this eventually has to help folks do their jobs better. Is that, number one, is my contention correct? And if so, how does open government help agencies do their job better?
Well, I would slightly adjust it in that, yes, in general terms, anything that makes you do your job better should be a good thing. So I don't mean to dismiss that aspect of it. But I might say it slightly differently, and that is we're seeing employees of the federal government, many of whom are careerists. They're not on the appointment side. They've actually thought of open government as a way to advance their policy objectives. So, yes, do your job better might mean process your grants a little faster, manage your audit issues a bit better, and that's just a narrow interpretation of do your job better. If you broaden it out, which is advance the mission objectives of the agency with which you serve, the agency to which you serve, that broadens the conversation, and it actually says, gosh, my level of policy output might otherwise be working on the reauthorization language for the program with which I currently work, or engage with the Office of Management and Budget on budget requests going forward. And those have been the traditional areas where folks kind of intervene on policy. Now I believe there's this new option, publishing data that belongs to the American people in a safe, secure way that actually will advance the mission objectives almost in an off-balance sheet kind of way. So a number of agencies have demonstrated at the career staff level how open government can be a new tool to advance the mission objectives. That's probably broader than just do your job better.
So does this website that's putting out all sorts of stuff that I know we don't like to talk about, does that make open government more difficult? Does it make it more difficult to sort of get people to embrace this idea that all of us are smarter than each of us individually when somebody's putting everything out there? Does that cause people to retrench a little bit?
Well, the first point is, and this was critical to the open government directive in the first place, so we struck several key balances. The first balance we struck was the balance between openness and privacy and security. And I want to combine privacy with security in this domain because there's a lot of information that would be extraordinarily useful for a variety of commercial applications, for example. But because of the privacy associated, we are restricted to the degree to which we can release them. The most obvious there would be Medicare claims files.
Mm-hmm.
There's no other source of data that can give you a better understanding of the quality or the lack thereof in health performance in community after community than that level of data. So on privacy, we've built in a whole series of reviews to make sure that which we publish as part of open government is reviewed, cleared, and has gone through the checks and appropriate processes to avoid concerns that we compromise privacy. And I would say the same vetting occurs on the issue of security. So the good news here is that for folks who scratch beneath the surface of the high level, be it published or not, there's actually a much more granular conversation that's taking place, which is if I'm to advance my mission objective, I can ask for more money, I can ask for new rules from Congress, but now I can publish data and encourage people to use it to advance that priority. Now I'm having a much more structured conversation, and then you can say, well, how do I do that without compromising privacy and security? So that was one key tension I think that we surfaced in the directive, making sure that we get those privacy and security issues elevated at the top. Second was the notion of top-down innovation versus grassroots and bottom-up innovation. And you saw a great deal of that come to life in 2010, and that gets to this issue about whether we move forward or move backwards. If we have platforms of innovation, the data.gov platform, the challenge.gov platform, the soon, recently announced ExpertNet construct around tapping into the expertise of the American people, then the federal agencies who are otherwise thinking about whether they move forward or not now have a basis upon which they can say, gosh, there's been a policy decision made to take advantage of these platforms. That becomes part of the culture of Washington moving forward. But at the same time, we have bottom-up innovation so that we have a different theory of the case in the Department of Education. There, for example, Jim Shelton said, we've got thousands of applicants to our grant program for the I-3 fund and many, many, many more that are capable of delivering breakthroughs, but we only have funding for a few. So what do we do with numbers 60, 70, 80, and 90 on our ranking list if we can't reward them with grants? Well, he got permission to publish the grant applications, or summaries, I should say, so that the top 100, in terms of their rankings, could celebrate the fact that they were in the top 100, and that might help them attract funding from philanthropy and other sources. So there's an example where they actually moved forward in their mission objective in ways we hadn't quite thought of at the central office, if you will, because of bottom-up innovation. That's taking place, and more breakthrough ideas in education will be implemented because of Jim's judgment on open government in that context.
So I'm going to offer you a direction to go in. And my thing about open government is you guys have been focusing a lot on citizen-focused open government. It seems like what comes out of a lot of this is agencies, intra-government, they get access to a lot of data that they've never had access to before. And sometimes that doesn't always get shared in the holistic way that it should, and I'll point to the sustainability plans. My thought always was, why not just release these? There's nothing controversial there. There's nothing, no WikiLeak data there. Why not publish those as they get right away and make them public? That way agencies can share their ideas for sustainability plans. Is that contention right? Is there a lot of intra-open government that can go on in terms of sharing good ideas?
Absolutely. And in fact, I don't mean to say this to kind of always say happy things. Let me begin by saying the negative thing. Where we've fallen short by far has been in really kindling that entrepreneurial spirit in the American people at a scale that is appropriate for the country. In other words, we have examples and pilots, and I shared with you a few on the health side and others. This public engagement question is far bigger than any technology issue or any other, regulatory matter. It's really a mindset about how the American people think about their government moving forward. So we've really made 2011 the year we engage more on the issue of public engagement. But having said the negative side of it, the positive end about intra-governmental, we're seeing this in areas where you wouldn't have expected it. So I'll give you one. In the Health Reform Act, the Affordable Care Act, it called for Secretary Sebelius to publish standards for ensuring ease of use, if you will, for these health insurance exchanges and other public health care programs to engage in the year 2014 so that it's easier to verify, you know, you got to verify you're a U.S. citizen,
right,
your income levels. There are all these technical things that you have to verify if you want to access all the health programs. So when we looked at this issue, open government gave us a bit of a advice here, and that was, or gave us some guidance. It said, how might the Homeland Security Department enable the HHS agenda or the tax department or the, you know, all kinds of state and local governments? And so we published, and the secretary endorsed in the fall, about a 25-page framework that explicitly was built on the notion of open and appropriate data sharing across agencies. And there we spoke specifically about a consumer-mediated model so that I, as an individual, could choose to see whether or not Agency X can work to share data with Agency Y and so forth and so on. So I'll defer to the healthit.hhs.gov where you can read the recommendations on Section 1561 of the Affordable Care Act, but that's just one instantiation of the notion that cross-agency data sharing, in this case with privacy focused on consumer mediation, is clearly an area of opportunity, and many, many more will come. I would also point out that on open energy open energy information, which is openei.org, there's a similar model of sharing data across federal, state, and local, and the private sector, all to talk about how we can achieve this clean energy economy.
Two last questions, and I'll let you go. One is about, we had you here participating in the book club about the book about innovation and payback and getting, is the government more innovative? Is it able to tap into that innovation more today than, say, a year ago, 2 years ago?
Absolutely. And I don't mean this to suggest that in the past this hadn't been done, but we've just made it a priority focus. So we're actually going to be reporting on this more in the weeks to come. But I would argue there are three key areas where we've seen a greater return on innovation investments. Area number one, we've increased more collaboration in our research and development investments. So one of the signature R&D projects that was funded in the Recovery Act was, there are several, but one of them was ARPA-E, which is about unleashing a clean energy economy.
Yep.
There was also a healthcare IT grant program that has enabled this kind of collaboration. In both examples, private venture capital and private firms in general have been at the front end of these conversations, not on the back end of these conversations. So off the bat, awardees at ARPA-E have a commercialization plan in place. The healthcare IT piece I referenced, for example, there was one at Harvard. It's the iPhone App Store for Healthcare is the acronym. Smartplatforms.org is the site they've launched. They've all moved forward with commercialization as their design principle as opposed to a back-end afterthought. So on R&D collaboration, we've certainly seen some new models that I think will hold great promise. Two, we've done a lot more to convene the private sector in open standards development activities, specifically around clean energy. We published the PAP-10 standard in the smart grid, which describes how utilities can share data with customers on their energy usage. And that was just endorsed this past week. 2 months ago, we saw the finalization of work that I initiated with my colleagues at HHS on a healthcare project called Direct, which makes it as easy as humanly possible for safe, secure emailing of healthcare data between trusted providers so that if you want your doctor to send your health record to another doctor, now there's a technical specification that was developed in 90 days by the private sector using open government principles, and the first commercial product was announced literally a few weeks back. So government is convener in the spirit of standards activities, plus the R&D aspect. Both of those complement the open government, open data aspects that we said earlier in the conversation, which is all about these new startups and entrepreneurial activities that are taking place. So in just these three dimensions – the government's role as convener, I believe, has demonstrated some meaningful progress and more to come.
Let me ask you to take a step back, because you're in a job that has never existed before, the chief technology officer. Talk about your experience. Is this role necessary for government? How has it evolved? How has it changed in 2 years?
Well, you know, it's hard to, these are judgments that leaders make. So it's hard to say that, like, every leader has this as a priority. So President Obama has declared technology and innovation as key principles for how he'd like to run the government. So in that context, he's actively seeking advice on any issue, healthcare, energy, education. How might technology, data, and innovation advance the objectives and either complement programs and legislation and budgets, or actually be at the heart of them? So that's just a value judgment that the president has made. And so for that, it's been a remarkable experience, because every cabinet agency has been open arms, welcoming of this construct. Many have replicated the notion of having a CTO by appointing a CTO or an innovation advisor, whether it be the State Department or energy or health, you name it, across the board, they've got leaders in this context. So the president, it's not a, you know, the world hasn't changed in 2 years in the sense that since this is a presidential priority, the administration's responded. But I will say this, is it needed? Is it useful? In a world where we have limited budgets going forward, and we have think of simple supply and demand. The demand for public sector services continues to grow. Our supply of resources to support those programs is dwindling or challenged. We're going to have to think of breakthroughs. Simple marginal improvements on the side aren't going to get us to where we want to be. We've got to find a way to foster breakthroughs. And I think the notion of having leadership think about those opportunities, whether it be through R&D or open platforms and standards or open data or any of the above, there's certainly a role to be played in thinking about that question, and I don't want to portend what the future might hold for other administrations, but I believe this is going to be something that will hopefully stand the test of time.
And there was a lot of talk of before you guys all came in about the role between the CIO and the CTO. How has it worked out in the real world between you and Vivek Kundra, the CIO?
Well, it's exceptional, and in part. It's blessed by the fact that we have a very long-standing friendship and history, so we can finish each other's sentences. We know when we're both needed. We know when we can, you know, cover for each other. But the great news about this is that we've essentially managed not just our separate worlds of activity, but also that which is collaborative in the middle. So, in the context of IT. Vivek has been doing an incredible job making sure that the $80 billion of federal spending on IT is most thoughtfully deployed. So he's very aggressive in managing the IT investments, in ensuring we have a game plan to deliver more value for the taxpayer dollars. And he just recently published a strategy document, 25 key principles moving forward. All of that has been phenomenal and is in his domain. My domain around some of these issues, namely the role of innovation and R&D, are key areas of growth, but they're not typically in the domain of the CIOs at the agency level. They're typically in the domain of either the policy advisor for innovation or the CTO at the agencies. And so we've been able to, you know, engage on that area. And then we collaborate and partner exceptionally on where we might harness technology investments under the purview of the agency CIOs in a manner that might serve as the platforms for innovation. And I would say going forward, you're going to see a lot more of this, specifically the role of open APIs and other programming tools, so that when we invest technology dollars for new applications in the government, we'll be thinking early about open innovation principles moving forward. So we're looking at all of these issues. It's been a tremendous opportunity to work with a dear, dear friend and colleague, and so it's been a lot of fun.
Oh my goodness, I could talk to you for 3 hours, but I know you have a real life.
Thank you.
Go and one word that you want to give to folks as they move to feds, as they're looking into 2011 and they're thinking better, faster, cheaper, and they're going, how am I going to get this done? You would say to them,
frugal engineering. It's a design principle on how we think about the work we do in a manner that befits the cost constraints we're operating under. And it's a cultural and learning opportunity. I'm going to be taking that frame on the road. Frugal engineering as a design principle is going to be one that I hope we will have my colleagues and peers think about in the weeks to come.